So the first is a very critical thing that really should say, because it is so important to our practice, is that relaxation is absolutely critical, a fundamental foundation for developing shamatha. So you want to have a comfortable seated position, and you want to not be striving. So you want to be relaxed both physically and mentally. So what we're trying to do then with is to there are three balances that we need to cultivate to develop shamatha. So the first is to relax while maintaining the clarity of mind that you begin your meditation with. So our minds are going to be clear when we begin our meditation, but there is a tendency for the mind, because of a lack of stimulation, for the mind to become dull and drowsy and lax as the meditation session progresses. So this is why 24 minutes could be too long, because you might just start nodding off. So the first balance is to develop relaxation while maintaining clarity that you begin your session for, with. And this is a very anomalous form of attention. It's not taught, it's not cultivated. And normally, when we are aroused, we are tense, like air traffic controllers. And normally, when we are relaxed, we are drowsy, like as in falling asleep at night. So we want to be simultaneously relaxed and clear, have a vivid awareness. And then we want to maintain, develop stability without losing that relaxation. And then we want to develop vividness without losing either the relaxation or the stability that we have developed. So find your comfortable position and relax the body on the exhalation. Release any tension, any pain on the exhalation. And then consciously choose your object. Direct your attention to the rim of the nostrils, the tactile sensations there. And with bare attention, just focus your awareness there, and then with introspection, return. Try to recognize that your mind has become distracted as soon as it leaves your object, and then return over and over again. So you can relax and stretch if you need to or want to. Many traditions of Buddhism, and I think secular presentations of meditation also rely on this breath meditation exclusively. And this is the entire path, really, of meditation. And so the benefits are this chiefly or especially noticeable very quickly is this feeling of serenity and peace and calm because we are stopping doing the ruminating mind. And so it's because the monkey can only look out one window at a time that the ruminating mind, to the degree that we are able to really be single-pointedly focused on the tactile sensations of the breath, it gives the chattering mind, it applies the mute switch to the chattering mind, which what we discover is that when you stop the ruminating mind, what you discover, not really create, but you discover peace, serenity, and eventually bliss. So, a very seminal, fundamental practice that you can spend years cultivating, and as you do, you ascend through what in some systems, most systems actually of Buddhism is nine stages of shamatha, where your mindfulness and introspection become more and more powerful, and you are just dealing with, as you progress through the different stages, you're dealing with more and more subtle forms of distraction and laxity or dullness. And so it's very fundamental, very basic, and it can be really perfected through various nine stages until you reach the point. So you start out at phase one where you're just directing your attention to your chosen object and only able to stay there for a few seconds. And then finally, you progress through the nine stages to a point where you are able to effortlessly maintain the balanced mind of vivid, stable attention for hours and hours on end. So that one could, be your entire meditation career, really, with, or at least your shamatha career, really focused on breath meditation. But that for us this morning, that is the first of four. And we're going to move on next to a what Lama Allen calls the Dzogchen approach to mindfulness of breathing. And instead of nine stages in the our immediate lineage, there are four stages of progress through the development of shamatha. And the first of these is called single-pointed mindfulness. And the advice of Dujom Lengpa, who is the chief of this very short lineage of ours in Dzogchen, is that you first need to, it's all about noticing the difference between stillness and motion. And so you first discover the difference between stillness and motion, and then you develop simultaneous stillness and motion. And so this particular practice of the Dzogchen approach to mindfulness of breathing really helps to develop this first recognition of the difference between stillness and motion. And then, especially in a little later practice that we'll be doing, having an experience of simultaneous stillness and motion. So the really what we are doing in this approach to mindfulness breathing is we are following the Buddha's pith advice in the Satipatthana Sutta. And that is that he said, just as a potter knows that the revolution of his wheel is long or short, know that when you are meditating mindfully, that your breath, the rhythm of your breath is long or it is short. So the thing about knowing that the breath is long or short is that it's a cognitive experience, not a tactile experience. So now we have left the tactile sense and are going directly into the mental experience of knowing the rhythm of the breath as immediately as preconceptually as a potter who is spinning his wheel knows that the revolution of his wheel is long or short. So it doesn't take words, it doesn't take any other sensory input, but you simply know the rhythm of your breath. And the so we are going to be giving knowing the rhythm of our breath with only our peripheral attention. And what we are primarily focused on, so let's just say 80% now of our awareness, because attention is selective, exclusive, and focused, and you're not going to parcel that out. But now we are really going to be meditating with awareness rather than attention. And so awareness can be aware of a number of different things simultaneously. And so what we're going to parcel our awareness to is about 20% of our awareness is going to be knowing the rhythm of the breath. And 80% of our awareness is going to be knowing the stillness and spaciousness of awareness itself. So this is really stopping doing what you're doing, what mental activity. You're just focused on stillness and spaciousness with the majority of your awareness, of your awareness itself, and then just peripherally knowing the rhythm of the breath, whether it's long or whether it's short. And so the progression here is that we apply the mute switch with focusing on tactile sensations, because if we don't do, first of all, master that, we're not able to settle the breath in its natural state. So the basic advice of Padmasambhava for these practices is that we are working on settling the body, speech, and mind in their natural states. And so the natural state of the body is relaxed, still, and vigilant. The natural state of the speech is effortless silence. And to get to that effortless silence of speech, meaning that the mental chatter has really been reduced to a point that you can remain focused without being distracted and going wandering with these compelling thoughts, is so the what we are doing with that, I just lost the thought. So yeah, some of you can relate. So anyway, we have, where are we? So we have what we're doing with the settling the speech in its natural state is to give up the distracting thoughts that are so compelling that we go wandering with them. And so Lama Allen has been very insistent in his advice recently that we really need to focus on applying the mute switch with the practices of breath meditation before we move on too quickly, so that we are basically just dealing with an overwhelming torrent of mental chatter. So we want to be able to reduce the flow of the mental chatter from a waterfall that we're standing under to more of a manageable flow so that we can actually see space and recognize space between the arising and dissolving of one thought and the arising and dissolving of the next thought. Yeah, so something to just really bring a precise stop to. So anyway, now that we have mastered breath meditation with our first 6 minute practice, we are able to begin to discover the stillness of the mind, where, like, the gaps that I just experienced between thought become more and more pronounced, and where we can really see that it's like this space of the sky is what we are really resting in, and that the rhythm of the breath, which is the movement, are like clouds passing in the sky, something like that. So let's resume our practice with another 6 minutes. And so here again, it's relax and settle the respiration in its natural state, meaning that you don't try to control the breath. Some traditions say that your exhalation should be twice as long as your inhalation. But here in this practice, what we do is we just allow the breath to find its natural rhythm, and without forcing it, without constraining it. So settle the breath in its natural state, and then you'll begin to discover the natural state of the mind in this open spaciousness, the stillness of the mind, and notice the difference between that stillness and the movement of the rhythm of the breath. with that practice, we are really beginning to recognize the difference between stillness and motion. And in many of the presentations of the progression of shamatha in this tradition, next would come taking the mind as the path. But I would like to introduce now the what is often thought of as a culmination of the practice, which is awareness of awareness. So this would be shamatha without a sign. And the reason to, I think, introduce that now in the third practice is that, as with relativity theory, motion is noticed from a reference point, or you can only determine motion from a reference point. So if you are on an asteroid or riding an asteroid towards Earth, is the Earth approaching or are you approaching the Earth? You can't really say from your reference point, it looks like Earth is approaching you. But so you need some reference point to determine motion. And so what we're going to do is to really become familiar with total stillness so that when we do the final practice, then taking mind as the path, that we will really be able to see the difference between stillness and motion and be able to have a simultaneous experience of stillness and motion, or begin to approach that, or have an aspiration for that anyway. So with the taking the mind as the path, or I'm sorry, awareness of awareness, what we are doing is just stopping doing again, but stopping doing all mental activity and just resting in the nature of stillness and spaciousness of awareness itself. So it is just not being cognizant of anything at all, except resting in what is left over when you do that. And you are aware of the sheer luminosity and cognizance of awareness itself. So that is just going to be our object of shamatha, is this cognizance and luminosity of awareness itself, which is a spaciousness and a stillness that we are going to experience. And then, when again introspection alerts you that your mind has become dull, because our habit is because of the amount of constant stimulation that we have, whenever there is no stimulation and we are just resting in awareness itself, the mind can think that, well, there's nothing to do, so it's time to fall asleep or become drowsy. So what we are trying to do is to maintain this vividness of our awareness, and without giving it something to make it vivid, without focusing on an attractive or compelling object. So just recognizing the inherent or the nature of awareness itself, which is this non-conceptuality, luminosity, and bliss, which you may experience as well. So, yeah, let's just jump right into that. And again, the point is to, we are really still working in single-pointed, this stage of shamatha called single-pointed shamatha, meaning that we are trying, first of all, to recognize the difference between stillness and motion, and then later have a simultaneous experience of stillness and motion. So with this meditation of awareness, we are becoming very aware of the perspective of stillness. So you may have noticed that there were still thoughts arising in your mind, that you weren't able to just rest in cognizance and luminosity at this point, perhaps. So what is the approach then when you recognize that with introspection that a thought has arisen? What you do in the advice of Yangtang Rinpoche, one of the great teachers in our lineage, is that you simply note it. So just as like a thief who has appeared at the window of your house, you simply note it and you will, and hopefully then the thief will just withdraw because you have noticed it. And as His Holiness the Dalai Lama put it in a commentary on Dzogchen, he said that the conceptual or concepts that arise in the mind are not self-replicating. They require engagement. So as long as you don't engage a concept or a thought that arises, it is naturally going to dissolve. It will self-release. And so what we are doing with this practice of awareness is not engaging thoughts, but noting them as soon as they arise and then watching them disappear, self-release. So hopefully you get with this practice some sense of the stillness and spaciousness of awareness itself. And then that will really help with our next practice, taking the mind as the path, in which you are able to not only notice the difference between stillness and motion, but have some sort of simultaneous experience of stillness and motion. So with breath meditation, when thoughts arise, we prefer that no thoughts arise. And we prefer that our awareness or our attention be riveted single-pointedly on the tactile sensations of the breath. So we have a clear preference for no thoughts in the practice of breath meditation. But in the practice of taking the mind as the path, thoughts are not the enemy, or thoughts are not something that we prefer not arise, because thoughts are always, mental appearances will always be arising. And the difference in our practice progression is how we react or what our response to thoughts are when they arise. So in taking the mind as the path, the critical thing is to practice without distraction and without grasping. So without grasp or without distraction means that we don't go wandering with thoughts that arise, meaning that we remain in this perspective of stillness, we're able to watch a thought as it arises while it is present, and then watch it dissolve again. And as His Holiness says, the thought is not going to be self-replicating. If we don't engage it, we can have that fascinating experience of watching a thought actually dissolve. And most of the time, we probably don't do that, because one thought we is compelling, we either feel aversion for it, meaning that it's a painful thought or an anxious thought or a depressed thought or something that an identity or a feeling of a subjective experience of a mood or something that we don't like about ourselves, a particular emotion. And we so try to rid the mind of that. We push it away. So when we're doing that, we're engaging it. And so that is then puts it on life support. And then we go wandering with that thought, with some story, telling ourselves something of the past or the future. And so we have lost our stillness of awareness to go wandering with the movement. So what we want to do is to practice without distraction and also without grasping, meaning that we're not distracted or go wandering with the appearances of objective appearances or appearances of outside objects, and we don't want to be grasping to subjective appearances. So the images of who we are, or experiences of emotions and things like that, that seem like they are us. So we don't, if we can maintain our still perspective of not grasping and without distraction, that we can then watch mental appearances arise, abide, and dissolve. And then we may notice a gap between the next appearance arising, abiding, and dissolving. So this gap between appearances can become longer and longer as we maintain our stillness, so that eventually, so when we begin our practice, it may seem that all we really know are the appearances itself, just like the clouds in the sky. But as we continue with this practice, the reality of the sky itself, of space itself, becomes more real than the clouds that are passing through it. And so that can be the same experience with our mind, that the appearances that arise are there just temporarily adventitious. They arise, but we don't really own them. So the key to this practice is a radical impartiality, meaning that we don't reject or prefer that painful or unpleasant thoughts not be there, and we don't try to cultivate or grasp to pleasant thoughts and think that happiness really is just a matter of having nothing but happy thoughts or happy memories. So this radical impartiality of just allowing thoughts to arise, let them be. So instead of preferring, as in breath meditation, that there not be a thought, we just let them be. And we maintain our perspective of stillness, and we are simultaneously experiencing the movement of thoughts as they arise, as they abide, and as they dissolve. So our basic stance towards these appearances is as in the Tibetan aphorism, let your mind be a gracious host welcoming unruly guests. So let's give that a try. Experience this radical impartiality. Experience the simultaneous stillness and motion, the stillness of your awareness, the movement of your thoughts, without grasping to them, without being distracted by them, without being going wandering. But if your mind does wander, let your introspection note it and alert you as quickly as possible, and then return to the stillness of your awareness to watch the next thoughts arise. Well, I hope this brief excursion and introduction to four different types of meditation practice in the shamatha tradition has been helpful or will benefit your practice. The question may arise, which of these practices should I be doing, and how do I know which one? So you might ask just as well, which is the best gear on a bicycle? It depends on the terrain, whether you're going uphill or downhill. And so if your mind is just filled with rumination and discursive thoughts, it could be that doing breath meditation and really applying the mute switch with tactile sensations might be best. And definitely reduce the flow of conceptual activity before you try to and do some at least settle the breath in its natural state to a degree before trying to take the mind as the path, because you'll just be overwhelmed by thoughts and go wandering with them. And I think that is probably an experience that many long-term meditators kind of find on the plateau, is that basically they are not able to have a si experience of simultaneous stillness and motion, but it's just all wandering. So, as Lama Allen says, know where your center of gravity is for your experience and work on the appropriate practice for that. And but then also make forays or excursions, explore the other practices as well, just to keep your practice alive and fresh and dynamic. And also important to mention that shamatha practice is not an end in itself. As Dzogchen Rinpoche has said, when you even the achievement of shamatha, with that, you have not advanced one hair's breadth towards liberation. So it has a very important role. It's essential but not sufficient for entering the path to liberation. And so what we are doing with the shamatha practice is developing what Lama Allen calls the contemplative technology. And so we are developing, as Galileo did, the telescope, the technology to really begin to do. Then once we have developed the technology, we can really do contemplative science. And that's what the point of shamatha is to make our experience of vipassana practice, really investigating the nature of the mind and how the mind relates to our experience of reality. It's intended to make those insights that we have stable and powerful so that they really can transform our perception of the world.